Hey, what's up, guys? You're now listening to Devo with Uncle Theo. Today is day 110. We're going to finish 2 Samuel today. Today, we're going to look at chapters 23 and 24. Yesterday, we looked at the Gibeonite revenge and how David made that right and how there was a famine for 3 years because of that. Then, as David does best, you remember when he started out as king, when Joab had killed Abner unrighteously in Hebron in a rescued city, David just wrote a song. And the song just made everything better. David ends out 2 Samuel writing songs. We talked about one yesterday. We weren't able to go through it fully. It was 51 verses. So we swooped down and grabbed a few things. But if you wanted to look at that psalm in its detail, it's packed with immense theology. And we'll look at his last song here in chapter 23. It says, "Now these are the last words of David, the son of Jesse declares, the man who was raised on high declares, the anointed of God of Jacob and the sweet psalmist of Israel. The spirit of the Lord spoke by me and his word was on my tongue. The God of Israel said, the rock of Israel spoke to me. He who rules over me righteously, who rules in the fear of God, is as the light of the morning when the sun rises, the morning without clouds, when the tender grass springs out of the earth through sunshine after rain." So this is David's final song. Now, this isn't his final speech. We'll see that tomorrow in 1 Kings chapter 2. But you see immense theology here that he truly knows that he was the king ordained by God. You see references to the Davidic covenant here, how the spirit of the Lord spoke by David. His word was on his tongue. And he also talks about how the righteous rejoice when there is a good king in place. It's like tender grass springing out of the earth or sunshine after rain. And here's a reference to the Davidic covenant, verse 5. "Truly is not my house so with God, for he has made an everlasting covenant with me." And that points not only to the kingship that flows from Judah and to the Davidic kingship and the Davidic covenant. This even flows all the way to Christ, because he will fulfill this as well. And after this last song, you get a summary of David's mighty men. It talks about them and their successes. And so when you're reading this last section, it'll just give you some of the highlights of what the mighty man did. Let's just swoop down and look at what that looks like. So in verse 8, it says, "These are the names of the mighty men whom David had. Josh had Bashabit and slain 800 men at one time." And you see another one here in verse 9, "Eleazar, the son of Dodo, one of the three mighty men with David, when he had defied the Philistines who were gathered there to battle, and the men of Israel had withdrawn, he arose and struck the Philistines until his hand was weary and clung to the sword. And the Lord brought about a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to strip the slain." Then you see another one in verse 11, Shammai. It says that he took his stand in the midst of the plot, defended it, and struck the Philistines, and the Lord brought a great victory. And so it highlights three mighty men. You keep seeing that verse 13. "Then the three of the 30 chief men went down and came to David in harvest time to the cave of Adullam and got him water to drink." And this is an interesting story here in verse 16. It says, "So the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines and drew water from the well of Bethlehem, which was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, he would not drink it, but poured it out to the Lord. And he said, be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of the men who went in jeopardy of their lives? Therefore, he would not drink it." These things the three mighty men did. And then it goes on to talk about the other mighty man of the 30. One in verse 18, Abishai, the brother of Joab, remember him? He swung his spear against 300 and killed them. And then even here closing, you have Uriah the Hittite, 37 in all. And it's interesting, Uriah closing this out, it's just a reminder of a David's sin, his failure. And you remember our formation, fusion, failure, which is this, and then future. And so future, we're going to point towards a future king who will make all of this right. Because remember, every time we're looking for someone, and we see a promise, we saw it with Joshua, maybe he will be the one that will conquer for us. And he fails with the Gibeonites. And you see the Gibeonites come up here in just the previous chapter. And then we see David and this man, maybe he will be the one. but he fails. But now we windowed it down further. Now we know, okay, it wasn't David, but whoever it is going to come from his house. You see that? We didn't have that knowledge before. All we knew before is that the seed will come from the tribe of Judah. And even before that, we just knew it would come from Abraham. And you see how it's winnowing down further and narrowing down so we can truly understand who this person will be. And that's the point of genealogies. And that's why Matthew 1 starts off with a genealogy. The Old Testament was helping you to narrow that down so you wouldn't confuse God's seed with Satan's seed. And God picks up with his lineage and his genealogy in Matthew 1. And so let's continue to winnow that down further, but we'll have to end here in chapter 24. And in chapter 24, a census is taken. And so we need to understand what's happening here. A census is just numbering. Just like when we looked at the census in Numbers 1 and Numbers 26, they were numbering the troops. So there's nothing evil or wrong with taking a census. But just like we talk about all the time, it's not what you do, it's why you do what you do. And so the anger of the Lord burned against Israel. That's what verse 1 says in chapter 24, and incited David to take the census. Now, he didn't have to do this. This is just what he wanted to do based on that anger. And it caused him to sin. Verse 2, he said to Joab, the commander of the army who was with him, go about now through all the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba and register the people that I may know the number of the people. But Joab said to the king, now may the Lord your God add to the people 100 times as many as they are, while the eyes of my lord the king still see. But why does my lord the king delight in this thing? Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the commanders of the army. So Joab and the commanders of the army went out from the prisons of the king to register the people of Israel. And so you see here, even he got a little book back from his leaders, but not too much. They were just wondering, this is out of the blue. Why would you want to do this? And so that kind of gives us a hint in the text that this isn't right, but they go through with it. Let's look at what happens. Verse 9, and Joab gave the number of the registration of the people to the king, and there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men who drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men. Now David's heart troubled him after he had numbered the people. Remember, just like when he cut Saul's robe off, he felt that conviction because he knew he had failed the test of moving too quickly and presuming on God. The same here, but this time God strikes. Listen to this. It says, when he was troubled, so David said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I've done. But now, O Lord, please take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have acted foolishly. Then David arose in the morning. The word of the Lord came to the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying, go and speak to David. Thus says the Lord, I am offering you 3 things. Choose for yourself one of them, which I will do to you. So Gad came to David and said to him, shall 7 years of famine come to you in your land? Or will you flee from 3 months before your foes while they pursue you? Or shall there be 3 days of pestilence in your land? Now consider and see what answer I shall return to him who sent me. Then David said to Gad, I am in great distress. Let us now fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercies are great, but do not let me fall into the hands of man. Whoa, we got to stop there because this is powerful. David numbers the troops wrongfully, and we don't know what the sin was, but we can engage in some sanctified speculation. We know it was a motive issue because we know just keeping the census isn't evil. So he either wanted to boast and just have the glory and how big and how great of a king he was over such a large army, or he was preparing to maybe go conquer and take more territory than he was allotted to by God. And he was just trying to see if he had the manpower to do it. We really don't know here, but what we do know is that David's trust is not in the Lord and his motives aren't right. And so the prophet Gad comes to him to give him 3 options. And David says, look, out of those 3, I want the one where the Lord deals with me, because I would rather be in the hands of the Lord than with man. And the reason is powerful because think about it. God is the most powerful person in those scenarios. So to fall in the hands of God is a terrifying thing. We even learn that in Hebrews, it's a terrifying thing to fall in the hands of a living God. But David says, even that terrifying God, I know his full character. And even though he's terrifying, he's also merciful and he loves me. And I would rather be in his hands than the hands of man. And that's just so encouraging to know the God we serve, one that you should fear, tremble at, and even be afraid of. Sometimes we try to correct the definition of fear to say, oh, it's just reverence. Yeah, it is reverence, but it's also scared. Like, we should be scared of God, but it should be balanced out with the fact that we know that he's merciful, he's good, he's just, and he cares for us. And so that should curtail that scary fear and allow us to rest in his arm. But we should never forget his power and what he's capable of. And David does that. And the chapter ends by them making it right. David builds an altar and he sacrifices. And it says in verse 25 that David built there an altar of the Lord and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. Remember our sacrifices, a whole burnt offering is total dedication with God, and a peace offering is because you have fully sacrificed yourself to God. Now you can have peace with God. You see what David is doing? Don't forget our sacrificial system is still here and it's still a language, but now we're dealing with politics in a nation. We're not dealing with those building blocks that we once were in Leviticus. And so I just wanted to bring that up to jog our memory so we won't forget about that. So he gives these peace offerings and it says, thus the Lord was moved by prayer for the land and the plague was healed back from Israel. And that's how our chapter ends. And we finished up 2 Samuel. And now we're about to move into the Kings. And we're about to see our man Solomon. And I ask you the question that I ask all the time. Do you think he's the seed? Do you think he's the Messiah? You already know the answer to that. Stay tuned, guys, and we'll catch you next time.